CBS 107 Radio.
Because it was West Prussia was turned to it was the Russian took that West Prussia, so Labiau, it's a little city by Königsberg, now it's Kaliningrad, and but now it's kind of
говоришь или нет. Мне интересно знать, что произошло.
А я и рассказываю.
Дурак, у тебя был маленький брат.
Да, и я сказал,
отец умер, про какую-то семью литовскую. Кому это надо знать?
Они нас слышали или нет?
Не, нас не слышали.
Ну, так все.
Ну, сейчас мы проверим, если нас слышат, и тогда мы пойдем дальше. У меня здесь очень сложные технологические...
Говори,
попросту. Хорошо, я не буду. Ты мне вообще ничего не говоришь, только
хорошо,
мне кажется.
Я тебе говорю, но зря время только тратишь.
Пока. DS106 Radio, this is Mikhail Grishovich live. And I'm sorry it took so long to get things figured out. The setup isn't exactly what I wanted to do here, and actually I happen to not be archiving, just to get what Timmy Boy's got me covered, right, Timmy? So here we go. So I'm sitting here with my parents, and I'm going to show you...
I was telling both the story for nothing?
Well, yeah, but it's just practice. So my mother just told a really long, interesting story. That's practice, Mama. We're going to do the ground. So let's do a different picture here. Hey, this is a good one. Okay, let's talk about this picture. Okay, so before...
No, I don't know about this picture.
Why not?
Yeah.
So before we do that, let me...
They're not historic picture.
Why not? Let me send this out to our friends. So why don't you tell us about this picture and what you're seeing here, and then while we do that,
okay,
I'll,
on the description of this picture. So, Mishinka... in a kindergarten. In 1974, October of 10th, 1974. Oh, it's a group picture. It's a group picture of the children and in a kindergarten in Riga. So, where are you? Where are you? I can see you. Where?
Yeah, my son, Jonah, found me right away like that.
Yeah, I know. I found you too. Here it is. Yeah. Okay, you look like John a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been told that we're a little quiet, so maybe this will do it.
What quiet?
That we're coming across a little quiet. We're also kind of far from the microphone. That's also the problem.
Okay.
But yeah. So you're talking.
So this is picture. It's not a big historical significance. It's
of
just
course, it's
your...
a big historical significance. Are you kidding me?
No, you was little boy.
No, but
what year it was?
Picture.
It's 74.
So I can show our
friends. In 1974.
So in 1974, I was how old was I? I was.
3 years old.
1974. So this is
but
the picture. Sorry,
I have more than 3 years old.
74.
Have a, electronic.
He's 1971.
Date on the backside.
20. Yeah. It's a date on the backside.
Okay. So yes. So yeah. Look at this pop.
It's October 10, 1974, right? So Misha is my son. Was three and a half years old. Sitting on the...
Shy, upset by something probably.
You didn't like that kindergarten, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is all this little girls and little babushkas.
Где микрофон? Okay.
Girl and babushkas. It's very funny picture. Yeah.
So I just sent this picture on Twitter to everyone who's listening. So I think we actually have. I think we've got the technical stuff figured out now.
Okay,
so I'm pretty
so
sure
I can
about
talk,
that.
So okay, I try to talk very slow and talk in a
you know what this
is? The microphone is here, so you know.
Where is microphone?
Here. Oh, now good. Tim's recording us.
What else? So this is nice picture. So 3 years
so,
old. You
okay,
just start
so in this in this room. Photograph.
Yeah.
I am with my kindergarten class. And they all look very, very, very Slavic, except for one person, which is me.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So to me, that's significant. I think I was the only Jewish child in my school.
Probably, yeah.
Right?
Probably, yes.
And I'm looking kind of forlorn here in this picture. You see me there?
Yeah, you're alone, yeah.
Yeah. So those of you listening, if you can spot me, you'll get some points.
yeah, you have to spot you. They have to spot you. You look different anyway. I was dressing you differently. Yeah. And the little girls, like a little babushka, is such a funny picture, actually. Ay, ay, ay. So what else?
Well,
What do you remember about that period? So I was 3 years old.
You just start going to the kindergarten because you, I was just keeping you at home till you was like almost 3 years old. So you just started to go, and you didn't like it a lot.
That's why he didn't like it.
Yeah.
He didn't get used to that.
And here you just started to go there. So all this crowd wasn't for you. So you was really different. They used to tell me you're so sensitive. They was telling me you. And actually a very interesting story, because I used to work in the same kindergarten when I was a teacher there long before you was born.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, and you was very shy. You was kind of very artistic there. And they was telling me, oh, he's so smart and he's so artistic.
What happened?
So, artistic. I don't know what's happened.
So what was
you
your
became what, a PhD. You became was, a PhD.
What, yeah. What is so? What was your life like then? There. So what was your day to day like?
I used to work. We used to live with our parents in a little apartment.
With our parents.
Did you
my
ever?
Parents.
Did you ever? Did you ever give me shav? Was it shav? She? How do you say that? Noise what? Professor wants to know
what?
If we ever ate shav.
What's shav?
Shav is a sorrel soup. She, может быть?
А, she, щавель, наверное.
Cabbage soup.
Нет, они имеют в виду щавель.
No, she.
She.
Капуста, ну.
Капуста.
So my parents are now arguing about what noise professor
said. Cabbage soup.
What did he mean? What
well, he called it sorrel, but I don't know what sorrel is in Russian.
I don't know.
Sorrel, there's not such
no,
a word.
I don't know.
Well, there is in English.
What
sorrel?
English?
Sorrel.
What is English?
We're going to have noise professor define sorrel for us. Щавель.
Щавель.
Щавель. Noise professor found it in Russian.
Он said щавель. Правильно? Щавелевый суп. Правильно? Щавель.
So did you ever feed me щавель?
Щавель is like a spinach.
Spinach soup.
Like a spinach, but a little different taste. Yeah, щавель soup.
They often serve as a cold.
Cold,
very
yeah. With eggs, very good, yeah. So what else would they want to know about Russian soup or Russian life? So anyway, we used to live with my parents in two-bedroom apartments. It wasn't very funny.
With neighbors.
With the neighbors, so...
Well, let's talk about the apartment, because that's an interesting situation there, too, because it was a small apartment.
People couldn't understand. You know, hard to explain, actually, how it was, life.
No, I don't think it's that hard to explain. I mean, we lived in essentially a one-bedroom apartment. Right.
Yeah.
Except we had the living room and it was a two-bedroom apartment. We had a living room and we had another bedroom where we slept.
It's not a two-bedroom, it's two rooms.
Two rooms.
Two rooms, not two-bedroom.
There wasn't
two
a room rooms. Off the main room where Baba and Dila slept?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's only two rooms.
So, but then we had neighbors who lived in the other room.
Right.
Yeah, it used to be, before the war, it was actually a good two-bedroom apartment, but they divided, so the neighbors was there. But we used to have like a little room beside, you know, kitchen. So it was
so what
like,
you should say, they brought a lot of people from Russia and take those apartments from people who used to live there and make a two families, actually three families live in one apartment.
But
sharing the one toilet. And one bathroom.
Horrible.
And
it
one
was
kitchen.
Horrible. Since when I came to America, we bought a house and it was a bathroom in my bedroom. And I still enjoy it. I still can't believe it. I have it. So, and it's so anyway, interesting story about that. what I wanted to, I lost my thought. I want to say something.
Well, so, what did we do in this little tiny apartment? Did we spend much time there? And Michael Smith wants to know what I liked to do in that apartment when I was a little kid.
I don't know. It was normal life. It wasn't. I mean,
well, it was normal. It was normal for there, but I don't know that it was necessarily normal for anyone who's listening here.
How is it can be normal that two families live in two room apartment?
It wasn't very normal. But
that's why Misha has a sad face.
Oh, come on,
it's
come
true.
On. No, he had a very good childhood. We loved him very much, and my father and my mother.
Well,
and
I mean, no one's questioning that, but it was a very different kind of lifestyle.
It's a different kind of.
I mean, everything
from
you know, I remember really, really well was when I was maybe 5 years old, and I went to the market with my grandmother. with your mom.
Really?
I went to the market with my grandmother, and she bought a carp.
Ah,
and
carp,
she
bought
a big
yeah.
live carp what? And stuck the carp. Carp.
Yeah,
fish,
carp. Fish.
And stuck the fish in the bathtub.
Yeah.
Where it
exactly.
swam around until she was ready to cook it. And then she made with
exactly.
gefilte fish out of it. And all
yeah, gefilte fish.
That's not particularly normal for life here. Would you think?
Yeah.
That's interesting to people.
Yeah, yeah, and she did.
I took a bath.
Yeah.
I remember having fish scales
yeah,
in the
exactly,
bath.
It's
exactly.
a good idea. So this country should
gefilte fish. She was making very good. She was very good cook, my mother, and she used to make. But interesting thing is about that house we used to live. It was on the border of the ghetto. It was a German ghetto.
It used to be a ghetto.
Jewish,
a long, long
Jewish,
time ago. Jewish ghetto.
Jewish ghetto, yeah, when
the
German was
Germans,
there.
Right?
And all this area where I used to live was, it was actually ghetto. From at the start from my house, and they used to say, the doctor used to live in our apartment. Actually, it was two-bedroom apartment. It was nice apartment. They used to live, and you still could find, it was a mezuzah on a door, so they used to, Jewish people used to live there. And when they would
send
even,
them to Siberia or kill them, probably.
Hmm. And lots of people, and it, when they start demolish the houses in down our street, they used to, they decided to build a bridge or something, and it was demolished the houses, and they used to, they found a lots of,
Jewelry.
Oh. Yeah, it was a newspaper. They and found
then,
that.
No,
was
you
making...
should say that jewelry. Jews who been persecuted, they hide it.
They hide it.
Hide
yeah.
it gold and jewelry in the walls.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember it was lots of newspaper a lot about
yeah.
it. Yeah, that workers used to find and how the one worker found it and used to buy vodka for it. You know,
well, let's actually take off from there. So, well, I'm getting a lot of questions about everyday life in the Soviet Union.
Okay.
Noise professor wants to know what normal life was, what, quote, normal life was like, and then not trivial. Michael Smith wants to hear a story about dinner with family. So, one of the things I remember is standing online. Like, it's a cliche of life in the Soviet Union, but I remember
yeah.
very well standing line with you and with Babushka and waiting to buy anything from toilet paper to cheese to bread to
yeah,
that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember you'd walk into a store and there'd be nothing on the shelves.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I remember having meals at the house with a lot of people over, special occasions, where the tables were full of food.
Yeah.
And there's stuff that people brought, stuff that people cooked. But that sort of belied what really was going on in the stores. There's nothing on the shelves, and yet we ate. Well, so tell us about that. How did that happen? That's a fairly common phenomenon.
Yeah, because I used to work I used to buy, how to say, working for that, it was, I don't know how to translate, actually. How to translate? When
sure.
I used to work for the company, I was like a PR, public relations, in the public relations, they used to hire people. And like.
In other words, everybody in the former Soviet Union has somebody who can provide them with
I used
food.
To buy in my company because my company was managing lots of restaurants and all this in the factories. It was a big factories and they used to manage, the company was managing the restaurants. So I used to buy food from there. So actually.
So my father's referring to is blood. Right?
What?
Blood.
Blood?
Blood. Blood. Right?
Well, yeah,
can you tell us a little bit what that means? Because that's a very important factor in
you do
like
something for
person.
Me, I do something for you. That's
yeah, what this means.
That's what it means.
You work in a factory, you work somewhere where you can find a pair of shoes, and I work in a place where I can buy, then it's meat, so I buy meat for you, you buy shoes for me.
It's underground
like
trade.
Yeah, it's like
at the same
trade.
Time, nothing
yeah.
in the stores.
Yeah,
no
exactly.
food in the stores.
Because my company was managing the restaurant, so
no.
there was lots
okay.
of food.
I remember one time, and this image stuck with me because it was kind of unusual at the time, and then later I understood what it was. But I remember we had friends over, and there was a bottle of vodka, or maybe it was even very possibly gin on the table because it had the Gordon's or the Boar Head. So it was an American bottle, maybe an English bottle.
I don't
remember. Do you remember people getting stuff from outside? No?
No, I don't remember any gin on any table.
No, vodka.
But always vodka.
Cognac,
all different kinds.
Could you remember someone who could get...
Cognac, but...
Could get booze from other countries? Do you remember that? Could someone do that?
Maybe if we, you know... No, I don't think so. It's not typical. Maybe somebody who have a family member who used to plow.
Swim?
No.
Mariak? Sailor.
Sailor brought from abroad some kind of gin or some other liquors.
But usually, most
of the time it's
mostly
vodka
cognac and Riesling, that Bulgarian wines or something.
And very cheap Russian wine.
Hmm.
Yeah. Portwein, too. It used to be Portwein. But we didn't know another life, you know. You know, we've been young and very optimistic, and we had lots of friends. And like I told last time,
you were optimistic in that environment where I've heard you talk about this before, where you essentially felt oppressed because you were Jewish.
Yeah, we did, but family was very good. We had a very good family, my mother, father, and it was big family. My part of my family, from mothers that live in Odessa. So in the summertime,
Odessa is like ground zero for Jews
we used to go there. So it was good childhood. It was very simple, but we didn't get hungry. My father used to work. We didn't have the extra money. We was living very modest, but always had a food on the table. And my mother was always cooking. She didn't work. She stayed with us. So actually, we had a good childhood. Outside, I remember I used to go to school with the ladies. Once my father, he went to Sochi to summer place for a vacation, and a sanatorium or whatever. And brought some pear and peaches, and I remember I brought in school, and everybody was kind of, that girl who was with me in school, they didn't know how it looked like, what it is, because it was poor neighborhood, actually, when I used to live. This was Jewish, was before it was Jewish neighborhood. But. So, we didn't live in Berlin. We had lots of friends, and I still have them, you know. I have my friend Nadia in New York. I have friends in Providence, Rhode Island. We used to grow up with them.
They used to come over to our house all the time.
Yeah, of course. It was very. Right. We entertained ourselves. It was a very kind, nice people around. So my childhood actually was very nice.
We have
pure.
a couple interesting questions. Zach, who you met the other night.
Oh, hi, Zach.
On the radio.
Yeah.
Hello, Zach.
I remember.
Noise professor wants to he wants to know about the role of music in the Jewish community.
Valeria can say about music. Lots about music.
What's the question?
The role of music in that
role?
Community.
Role. Расскажи, что подпольное. Beatles. I remember last years.
This is actually exactly what he's asking. He wants to know about music, popular music. You were really into the Beatles. You heard the Beatles there.
Of course, I was young. Beatles were very popular. But Soviet media,
Russia, it used to be a Russian music all the time.
Never, I would say, never let the people listen to the foreign stations, radio station. I remember. My favorite was Radio Freedom and
Voice of America.
So they try to interrupt, to try to people stay away from listening to those radio. But people always knew what was going on, and everybody has somebody in America and in Israel and. So the good music was very popular, and people, not everybody, but a lot of people, majority of people, knew Beatles, knew Rolling Stones, knew
very popular groups at that time. Was it legitimate? I mean, could you go to the store and buy a Beatles record?
No, not really. At that time, when Beatles were popular, they couldn't find them. You couldn't find any records in the store. But the interesting thing is what's happened. They when Beatles were so popular and everybody knew about them, the Soviet media said, I remember was a newspaper said, poor young workers from Liverpool,
working class kids,
yeah. Liverpool. So they kind of admitted that they're very talented and. They kind of.
Well, it worked ideologically, though, right? They were from a slum town in England, right? They were working class kids. So ideologically, that worked, and they weren't singing or anything that particularly.
That's right.
Provocative at the time.
But they tried to stress that they were from proletariat society or something.
So what was the feeling about Westerners at the time, and Americans especially?
We didn't know anything about that. We knew it's America
somewhere.
There
was very little information. And what we knew, again, from Voice of America, from Radio Freedom, we knew something, but not enough. Even when we were ready to leave the country, we even 100% we didn't know where we're going. The Russian propaganda kind of did their jobs, so we knew there was going to be a different life, but we never knew that it's going to be as good as we finally.
But you knew to some extent that that's where you wanted to be, right? Because we could have gone to Israel, but you didn't want to go there.
No, we didn't go to Israel. We thought that. America
that's
is
only
the best,
because we didn't want you to go to the army.
The best place, mm-hmm. and more secure.
Yeah, sure.
And then we would choose to go to the United States.
It was more secure.
We were very optimistic. Most of the Russians or former Soviet Union people from the Soviet Union were well educated people, and we were very optimistic. We thought that. That does mean what we're going to do at the beginning. We're going to dig the holes, dig the trenches, or wash the dishes. It was okay. And, you know, we're doing okay now.
But
many, many years
ago. We didn't know anything about, we equally know about Israel, about America. We didn't know much about that country. You know, I didn't know much about anything. I mean, America and Israel was like, oh. Israel, America, but we didn't know anything exactly about that country, particular about that country.
Do you know anything about American politics?
No, nothing. We didn't know anything. Oh, but I remember the time when President Kennedy was shot. I remember they used to translate.
Do you remember the moon landing?
Yeah, I remember very well. Sputnik, right?
No, not Sputnik.
No, Sputnik.
Well, Sputnik
moon,
is
moon
landing.
Moon landing.
No,
I remember.
Sputnik,
yeah.
I remember Sputnik. It was
a big
great celebration.
Oh, yeah.
A celebration here, too, sort of.
Yeah, no. It was a national pride.
Yeah, because they're speaking about my childhood. You know, it wasn't internet. It wasn't. My mother used to say to me, after the war, you know, people was hungry. You know, after the war, they used to in the hungry for how to say? I forgot the word. For companies, very hungry for relationship, hungry for just for families, and they used to. And used to get together. I remember when I was a little girl, my mother used to get sometimes very big companies. It was like a potlucks, and they came, lots of people was coming, and it was nice. It was nice life, you know. They was young, and I remember laughter and dancing, and it was, so they did best of it. So it was... There wasn't internet, much.
There was no internet
no,
over
no
here,
Facebook,
too.
No Facebook,
There was no Facebook here.
I know. It was a different time. So it was nice childhood, actually. They celebrate every birthday and used to be a company.
Do you think that you feel that way because it generally felt... as though you were happy, or you just didn't know any better? Was it that you were miserable, but that's the only thing that you knew? So I sort of asked that kind of, you know, facetiously, because I know that...
When you're a child, you don't know anything else. You know your family, and you know, I had a good family, a good loving family. And it was, we never been hungry, we always...
Well, but the very important thing, though, about your family was that your father was a military man. And that's a very important thing, because as a military person, he had certain privileges, right? And he was also a decorated war veteran.
Yeah, honestly, you know, like I said before, in my school,
there was lots
of poor girls.
The only privilege he has as a military man... That in
the
1960s, I think, or 50s, Khrushchev tried to send him to Siberia.
No, it wasn't Khrushchev, that was Stalin.
Not Khrushchev, it was
Stalin. It was Stalin in 53.
It was a Khrushchev, not 50s, 60s.
Oh, later, say. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, Valeria, when you get this information... Mm-hmm. No, my father was a lucky man. I have to tell you that because before 1953, he came from work. He used to work in a headquarter of aviation headquarter in Riga. So he came from work and told my mother he got laid off. They took him in a red carpet and they told him your mother last name is that and that and you
can
relatives.
So basically, what my mother is referring to is my grandfather lost his job because he was under investigation by the KGB for having relatives overseas, which was a common accusation.
But
right?
It wasn't true.
It wasn't true, and there were other subtexts there. I mean, the military were always targeted, and Jews certainly were. And so in 1953, there's a knock on the 53, knock on the door, right?
No, it wasn't any knocking door.
luckily
not. But... That time, it was people that among the, all these Jewish families was a big, just rumors. Like they tried to send it was actually the truth. It's all these trains were staying in a station, that all these wagons and wanted to transport all this Jewish family to Siberia. It was true, and before Stalin it's 1953, so it was true. But like I said, it was probably in a. March or April, this happened with my father, and after 2 days, Stalin died, and it was in 1953. So they laid him off, and then in 2 days, Stalin died. So he got his job back and everything. Yeah, he was a very lucky man.
But Pop, you were
also
saying that...
So also us, because it was rumors. We had, my mother had a friend whose relative was working in KGB, and he was telling everybody, you know, you better buy the warm things, because they're going to get all your family, going to get to Siberia.
Wow.
Stalin got ready all these echelons, all these trains to transport all these Jewish people to Siberia. It's a true story. You can find this on the internet.
So what are you talking about in the 60s, Pop, where you said that he... The,
I
that
think
he's
in
the
60s.
No,
also, he was persecuted in the 60s. What he did in the 60s?
On the 60s, Khrushchev, what Khrushchev did, he just, cut at all this military position. He didn't have any job anymore because he laid off all this military. It was the reduction. It was a military reduction. He just laid him off. And my father actually, I have to tell you, in the 60s, and he decided to do something with his life. So he went to dental school and he became a dentist.
No, he wasn't a dentist. He was a dental technician.
He made
prosthetic teeth and jaws and stuff. Actually,
I remember
finding these plastoparous molds of teeth all over the apartment.
He was actually very talented guy. He used to work in a clinic, But you know what? He was used to do some kind of left job at home because he needed money, so it's
interesting.
True.
You know what? I remember interesting thing. When we decide to go to leave the country, to leave the Soviet Union, I gave the note to my superior at my work, and I said, I remember, please relieve me from my duties, because we were going to Israel. It was a panic. It was a disaster. Everybody didn't know how to react. So they got a huge, great meeting, and they accused me in treason, And they told me, you're a traitor. What, you go to a capitalist country? Do you know what's going to happen over there? And, you know, I lost my job and was 3 years without a job.
3 years?
3 years.
Took that long, huh?
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And finally we get our permission and we get here. Thanks God.
Well, you think
thanks God and thanks... My wife said thanks to Reagan.
Well, yeah, that's the can of worms that we shouldn't open right now. We should definitely talk about Reagan at some point.
We
did a little bit last time, but...
What do you think? We should talk about the winner?
We start talking about Stalin.
Winner?
Yeah.
No,
I'd like to leave him out of this broadcast
we was talking about Stalin, about how, and I you know, people was like a, I don't know, blindfolded, I don't know what was happening, they all believe in Stalin, they was like brainwashed, all of them, and I remember
not all of them, you also have been brainwashed to a certain age.
Yeah, of course. So I remember when I was 7 years old in 1953, my mother shipped me to my grandmother in Odessa, and she lived in very, very little apartment. Her husband shipped me. I don't know how to say it. She sent me to Odessa to her mother. So. And I remember in March, what day exactly Stalin died? I don't remember.
March 5th, 1953.
I remember that morning very vividly. Radio was talking, and my grandmother was crying.
I was playing music.
Exactly. And my grandmother was crying, and I woke up in the middle of the night. I was sleeping in a big bed with her.
A lot of people crying.
I said, Grandma, why are you crying? And she said, Tanichka, that Stalin died. And she was crying. Yeah. Why? She was poor. And her husband died in the war. Why she was crying? I don't know.
I know.
So anyway, and I remember in the morning I went with her. It was so many people. It was like a big field, I don't know what it was. And it was a little store in the corner, and she bought me a candy. I remember that. But that was lots of people, and I was listening to the radio. So it's my childhood memories. I was 7 years old. So they all cry about Stalin. They mourned him. I don't know how it happened, but it was.
How did you feel about that, Pop, when Stalin died?
Yeah, I remember that morning, and same thing. I woke up, and everybody around were very sad. And some people cried, what are we going to do without our leader, without great comrade Stalin? But actually, you know, little by little, people found the truth. And Stalin,
they worship him.
Now everybody knows it was the greatest murderer in the history after Hitler.
I know. Some people knew that.
I would say I put Mao in somewhere there.
My mother didn't cry, but...
Was it?
Mao?
Mao? No. Dilettante.
That's a different conversation. Dilettante? Yeah. Mao was a genocidal dilettante.
I
thought
Mao was interesting, too. So, anyway...
Stalin killed about 40 million Soviet people, starving them to death, killing them in the concentration camps, and, you know... That's what's happened with Comrade Stalin.
You know, Hitler as a bandit and evil man, and Stalin was evil man. But Hitler didn't kill his own kind, but Stalin did kill his own kind. I saw a movie about it. Right.
We're getting into a conversation.
That's okay.
Stalin.
But the point is that he was much beloved there, right?
Yeah.
That despite what came out later, when he died, people were upset, like your grandmother, right?
My grandmother was very upset, and how did
Yoshka feel about that?
Huh?
How did my grandfather feel about that when Stalin died? What did he say?
You know what? I wasn't there. I told you. At that moment, I was in Odessa. But my mother used to tell me stories. She said, in the street, everybody in Riga, everybody was in the park. I had a sister, so she was walking in the park with her. And everybody was upset, and my mother wasn't upset. And that one lady came to her and said, why you don't upset? I just like why you don't cry? And it just, she was ready to go and tell KGB my mother didn't cry.
I didn't know your father at that time, but I know for sure he was upset by Stalin's death.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, he was a communist to the end of his life.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah,
he was.
He was.
Because, you know what,
he was very upset when we left, and he realized that we were going to be better off over here than over there. But himself, he came over here. We show him how we live. We show people around, and he still couldn't believe that what he saw. And when he came back, he said, "You know what? You show me America from
the parade route. The parade route
from parade route.
You know what?
The thing about it though is that's of course what he said." Right. However, remember he came here with an empty suitcase.
Yeah, that's
and right. I was naive enough to think, oh, he didn't bring anything.
Yeah, I remember. You came
and then he left his suitcases full of all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Like I remember you guys bought my grandfather who was close to, I mean, he was 70, I don't know. 72,
right?
So you bought him some sort of jacket, but you also bought him a Puma tracksuit. And he looked kind of like a Polish gangster.
I don't know about that, but you know what, I was happy to buy for him because he never had anything in his life, and he was going in a military suit all his life. He didn't have anything.
To the end of his life, he still didn't believe that.
He believed in the bottom of his heart, he did believe. And you know what, it was hard for us because we just came not long ago, and I didn't spend money on myself, on my family. I tried to please my father, I tried to do good thing for him and we bought lots of stuff for him. Yeah, when he left, he had and I sent him to Boston also because we had a friend in Rhode Island.
Did we take him to Disneyland, right?
Yeah, we went to Disneyland.
Well, I actually remember,
Disneyland?
Yeah, of course.
I remember learning about Disneyland when I was still in the Soviet Union, when I was about 6 or 7. I remember there was some book I had that had pictures of Disneyland. It was the Mark Twain Steamboat. And it's presented Disneyland as this idyllic children's village,
yeah.
Right? Where children are happy.
Yeah,
and
we never took him to Disneyland.
We did. Him to Disneyland. We absolutely did.
Of course, did.
I don't remember.
In Valeria, yeah.
We did. It's a controversial point here.
Yeah, we did.
In this house.
We have picture of it. We have picture.
Посмотришь дома. When we get that picture, folks, we'll be sure to...
He was saying with Mickey Mouse, remember? And it was a doctor. We met his mother and father too. It was Dr. Schwartz family came from Russia too in that moment. And we went to Disneyland. We met them there. Remember?
No.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Well,
you know, it's interesting because he was an ideologue to the end, and he even tried to kind of make sense of what he'd experienced in the U.S.
And what was happening in
the Soviet Union at the very end, and then how he was treated in Riga, Latvia after the fall of the Soviet Union. And I remember, I went to see him in 1985.
Yeah.
But the thing I remember is that his line to me was that communism was a really, really great idea. And it's a really good thing, and we should strive for it. But these brigands, they like Lenin, and like even Lenin, who he had adored, they basically corrupted this ideology and turned it into this totalitarian evil system there.
Yeah.
That was his point of view.
I can explain why, because he was little. No, it's my father was too.
Okay, it's okay.
But he was from little shtetl, and he didn't have anybody. Soviet power gave something to the people who was nobody. He was little in the shtetl, and he didn't, he wouldn't be anybody, but Soviet power gave him something. So he was grateful to that. And for
in 1950, the same power, same Soviet system tried to destroy him.
Yeah, but it was later on.
That's what
he
should be.
He didn't remember that.
Noise professor just posted a tweet. We should have bought him when he was here to go with his Puma tracksuit. We should have bought him like a big chain. I didn't have money for the big chain.
I bought him a leather jacket, I remember, in Sears. Remember, it used to be Sears. I bought it. Yeah, he was very happy.
So there's some questions that we should answer. First of all, these people are all completely indoctrinated by the Disney...
What?
Disease, ideology. These are all Disney freaks, these people listening to us right Disney now. They're basically saying Disneyland is this idyllic, happy place that brings joy.
I remember my father, he used to cry. He used to... I saw his face, you know, there. I have a picture. We have lots of pictures from that.
Well, and just to answer, Michael Smith wants to know when we came over, how that happened. Michael, we talked about that a little bit last time, but we immigrated in 1979... to Ventura, California, and people were leaving, and so we saw our opportunity to leave, Jews particularly, and we left, and we were sponsored here by a synagogue in Ventura, California, and essentially how that happened. So we should probably think about closing out the broadcast here, because I'm running out of juice, and we've been hogging the airwaves for a little while. But let's talk about, since we're talking about my grandfather, let's talk about this. So here's I have actually a lot of photographs of this kind of thing, but here's a photograph.
But it's not very good photograph.
Well, how about this?
Interesting.
Here's a photograph of a polar bear. Photograph of a polar bear, and I'm going to tweet this out in a second. And I actually have a bunch of these. I have a bunch of polar bear cubs and that kind of thing. So tell us why we have these pictures of these polar bears and what the story is with that.
Very short. My father, like I told you, he was in aviation, right? And he had opportunity to go to
Arctic.
And what it was there, I found out later, of course, he was telling us they want to build bases for rockets.
So basically they wanted to launch missiles from the polar ice at the United States.
Exactly.
And this is what he was there to do.
Yeah, no, he was meteorologist. He was predicting the weather. He was a meteorologist.
He was a god. He was predicting the weather.
So he was a meteorologist, my father. They had a laboratory to study the weather there. So, but he didn't build anything. He just was a scientist. He was a meteorologist. So...
It was kind of a research group.
It was a research group, yeah.
But we didn't find that out till later, though. We did, because I think that we all, you know... We knew that he was there doing something interesting, but we didn't know what it was until later.
Right. Yeah. He was telling why he was there, because they was launching, but he wasn't the one who was doing that, but
you think he'd have a problem with it? I mean, of course not.
It was his job, and it gave us a little opportunity to, he got little money, and my mother used then went to Crimea. For... vacation, so it was gave him some money, and he was like 9 months over there, and I was in his fifth grade. What year it was? It should be there written what year it is. Somewhere. I have lots of pictures too. What year it is?
This is записано здесь. Маму убили, а маленький медвежонок плачет.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, my father just pointed out a picture. I'm about to tweet a picture of the polar bear.
1956.
One second. So there's a picture of a bunch of guys standing in front of what looks like a dead mother polar bear with a baby polar bear in front of her. And they're all posing really, really proud and happy. And then in the back it says the mother was killed and the, was it the medvezhonok?
Medvezhonok.
The little
bear is crying. So, according to these pictures that we have, it looks like what they did other than launch missiles or try to launch missiles with polar ice is they tortured poor animals. Because we have a picture of them shooting walrus. Here's one with him with some sort of a dolphin thing that they killed. Here's one of dogs chasing bears.
He didn't kill anybody. Don't say about
that. He did. But look, according to these pictures, a lot of hunting going on there.
I think that they used bear meat. They ate it.
No, here is the picture of two bears, and he was eating in 1956, and he was wrote in the bag. They walked the little. They named him Mishutka and Grishutka, and they was walking around it. And here it's what your friendly picture actually.
Well, you know, the significance of this picture that my father pointed out with the mother bear is actually it's very possible that this is the polar bear whose skin my grandfather brought back
from the North Pole.
You're like, is this one?
No.
Well, it's a dead polar bear.
He told me.
He killed only one.
But no, I know that. But he told me that it was a female bear that they killed, and they did something with the cubs. And then actually the teeth of the polar bear are in my basement right now.
They sent the cubs to the
zoo. But we have the skin. You know, like it was a rug that we had for a long time.
I have teeth
in my basement. I'll take a picture of that at some point. Yeah, absolutely.
Here he actually writes very friendly, you know. It's a friendly, Mishutka, Grishutka.
It's a friendly polar bear.
They
didn't kill them.
You know what? He's the king of the Arctic.
They didn't kill them for pleasure. I think they use oil and the lard.
Yeah, not for pleasure, yeah.
And the meat, I think they ate those bears.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, probably every time a polar bear came around the camp, they felt somewhat threatened and they felt that they needed to shoot it, right?
No, it was in 1956 he was there. He was working for maybe almost a year. And he came, but he was telling us a story. He was writing. My father was a very good writer. And I was thinking one day, he wrote lots of letters all the time. Was beautiful letters. And I left them behind. I don't have the letters with me. But he was a very good writer. Was writing the story about
Nice Professor, your photo is a big hit. We got to retweet that one.
Okay. And actually very friendly here.
So I didn't tag it right. Let me do it again. I'm tweeting out a photo that Nice Professor photoshopped with my grandfather, which is brilliant.
He liked the bears. Look at all the picture of the bears.
Okay. Life was tough.
Life was tough, yeah.
So, we apparently are very popular here on Decimal 63. We have 11 listeners, which is a lot. Yeah, which is a lot for us.
Cool.
Yeah, our maximum tonight was 12.
What else you doing?
So, what should we do? Should we play a song? Should we talk some more? I think it is time to start thinking about giving up the stream. But what
you have to
there's actually a lot here to talk about. These are cool one. Pictures that I have.
What is the proposition?
So yeah, you know, I have to tell you, I was very proud of my grandfather that he fought. This is you know a young Dr. Soviet speaking here, but I was very proud of my grandfather. He served in the military. He was decorated. He was big. Supposed to me, he was a big war hero. He went to the North Pole, which was super cool for me.
Yeah,
and he was you know, to me he was a hero.
He was actually extraordinary man. My father, you know what? I always thinking if he would live in that society, you know, he was very he was very energetic and very. Kind of, he used to be
very charismatic.
Charismatic, yeah. Always humor, always. He was very handsome man too.
What do you think of him, Pop?
How you say in English? Приспосабливаться.
Приспосабливаться?
Да, в смысле.
Это.
Я не знаю.
Go ahead.
How you say?
Here. Yeah, it's picture from that outstanding students, right? And he's he always was outstanding student, my father.
I think he's one with a seal, right? I don't know what the term. He's basically saying he's a lackey of whatever system he's under. That he believes what
he's supposed to believe.
He has
a
talent to
get
used to that.
I'm not agree with that. Hmm? I just know
you don't think he really believed it. You don't think he believed that the Soviet Union.
And
he said this to me many, many times. He said that there is no other system like the Soviet system, and no other system has provided its people with as much happiness and prosperity as the Soviet system.
Because
I remember when he was young, very young, and I always argue with him. He was Brezhnev at that time. At the head of the police bureau, and I said he's a jerk. He always was yelling at me. What do you understand? What? You know, don't know nothing. The Soviet system is the most lovable, most popular system in the world, and everybody wants to live in that system.
But did you? But you often had arguments with them, right? You
fought with them all the time. Not all often, the time. All the time.
He had arguments with lots of people. You to remember that the friends. We had lots of friends, and they argue with him too.
But this is the father-in-law, son-in-law argument. I mean, that's a particular thing. You had that going on pretty seriously, right? So what were you arguing about? Politics? What were you
doing? Always about politics.
Politics.
I try to tell them, to be really smart to understand what the Soviet system about, what those leaders are. They stupid jerks. They don't have any education, and when they talk, you don't know what they're talking about. And they didn't know what they're talking about. Even Gorbachev later on, when we've already been here at that time, right? Mm-hmm. When Gorbachev was in power.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand. I always listened to him. And you cannot believe it. You don't understand what he's talking about. He talk, and he was a brilliant translator. He tried to put everything together so to make a sense. But they always talk. They didn't know what they're talking about. And he didn't agree with me. He defended all the time. He defended his stupid Soviet system.
Keep him here.
Well,
I love this country. I only my regret
God
is we
God bless America.
We didn't leave.
Your only regret is that Ronald Reagan isn't still president. That's your only regret.
Yes. As a matter of fact. Ronald Reagan is my hero.
The only time that Ronald Reagan is discussed in DS16 radio is
why you don't like Ronald Reagan?
That's typical. What I tell you what, recently I heard one famous, very prominent Democrat. He said, yeah, Reagan was a great leader. I was really surprised when I heard from Democrat.
Well, we're not here to talk about Ronald Reagan.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
We're here to talk about life in the former
Soviet Union. But I have to tell you, they changed library. They made very nice now. You remember?
To you, my son now thinks that the Ronald Reagan Library in Simi Valley, California is on par with, like, Disneyland.
What's Disneyland?
He had a great time. He climbed all over the Air Force One. And the Berlin Wall, the chink of the Berlin Wall that was there.
Uh-huh,
was
good. Yeah.
He loved it. He, sure. Yeah.
But there's lots of interaction now for the children.
You should go yourself.
I've been.
Where have you been?
No, it's a new one. They built a new one. They remodeled.
I haven't seen the new one.
They
remodeled. Yeah, I'll go one.
I like the picture of Jonah and Eli on a horse. Riding a horse next to Reagan. Riding a horse.
Yeah, and Jonah was holding hands with your Mrs. and Mr. Reagan, and they got two statues there.
Anyway.
And proud picture is, I love American seal. I like that. And then, I love America, so I made a picture with me and Jonah by American President Seal.
Okay, Michelle.
All right. Well, you do know that Ronald Reagan was a friendly witness to HUAC to the House of American Theaters Committee as the president of the Screen Actors Guild, and he betrayed his fellow.
I didn't know that.
Very controversial.
During the witch hunts, Reagan was right there. Yeah, yeah.
He hate the communists like I, and you hate them.
Well, but you had a complicated relationship.
You know what? I don't know. I'm not a politician, and I don't know anything about politics. But I only know when Reagan he opened the iron curtains, and I saw my father, and I was grateful to Reagan. This is it.
Okay.
It's only thing I want
to say. So let's move off from Ronald Reagan.
Yeah. Okay. What do you want to
ask? So here's a question. So now, one of the things we haven't talked about is that you were living in the Soviet Union. You were living in Latvia.
Yeah.
And Latvia is about 50%. It's made up of about 50% ethnic Latvians, and the other 50% are Russian speakers.
Yeah.
Right. Not necessarily ethnically Russian, but Russian speakers.
Yeah.
So from all over the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
And of the Baltic republics, Estonia, Lithuania, it had the largest proportion of Russian speakers to the speakers of the native language, which was Latvian. Estonia was like 13%.
Today it's 30% Russian.
Right, but it's still pretty serious today. 30%. So you were living in essentially a multi, in a kind of bicultural society where you had, you know, even my school was segregated. So there were Latvian classes and there were Russian classes. So what was that like for you when you lived in Riga?
No, actually, we didn't think about it. It was part of the life.
I remember they made us study.
What, 1940s, before World War II, Russian actually conquered. I wouldn't say conquered. They came to Latvia, and the reason was, like they say, that the Latvian comrades asked the Soviets for help, and they march into the capital of Latvia, Riga, and that's what things started. And they've been there for many, many years, and Latvian, the real Latvian, they hate them. They hated them, and they still hate them. However, there was about 20 years Latvia is independent, but still there's antagonism against the Russians still very strong. And I understand why.
Yeah, I understand.
Well, when I was there in 1995, I remember trying to speak to someone in English. I was told that I shouldn't speak to anyone in Russian because if I do that, they'll be very angry with me. So I remember trying to buy a ticket at the railway station. So I'm going to buy a ticket to like Estonia or something. So I'm buying this ticket, and I'm trying to communicate this woman in English, and she can't understand what I'm saying. I can't communicate. I'm getting frustrated. So finally, I broke into Russian, and she starts screaming at me, like, "Why the hell are you wasting my time speaking in foreign language? Like, why don't you just tell me what you want in a language that I can understand so I can give it to you?" And then she basically told me to screw off. Like, she wouldn't give me the ticket. And then I, you know, I kind of, you know, yelled back a little bit, and I got my ticket. But they wanted me to speak. And in fact, when I got to Estonia, I showed up at my hostel. It was this little hotel sort of joint. It wasn't like a hostel. At like 7 a.m. before my room was ready, and there was a drunken Finn in my room. And the women who were running the hotel are Russian, and they were saying there's this really scary drunk Finn. And apparently he had come to Estonia for prostitutes, which is what he told me. Well, and cheap booze and all kinds of other stuff. So basically they said to me, you know, if you can talk to this Finn and kind of get him out, then you can have your room. And so I went into the room and I sat. I had actually kind of a lovely conversation with this drunken Finn who told me he was getting a divorce and he came there for the prostitutes and for the vodka. And so, you know, we kind of agreed upon the time that he would leave the hotel, and he did. But they were first of all very happy to speak to me in Russian, and they were very, very happy that I could speak English and get extract this Finnish person from the hotel.
I remember when I came first time second time, it already started. It was my father's 80th birthday. So, it already that Soviet Union wasn't in power anymore. It was free Latvia, supposedly. So, I came to the store and I tried to speak Russian, you know. And they didn't want to, sales girl even didn't look at me. And me and my sister once went to a nice restaurant, and they gave a menu in Russian. And we started speaking Russian, me and my sister. And the lady came and she said, "I don't have a Russian menu." And I said, "You can speak English. You have an English menu?" She said, "Yes." She gave me English menu, and I looked at every single prices, and I said, "Forget it." And I was mad, and I left. I didn't.
No, I think now they finally realized that without Russian, they can't survive because it's a huge neighbor, very important in their trades and their life, and they get a little bit softer now.
When I was 2 years ago in Riga, I decided to do facial. You know, I'm a esthetician, so I decided to see how they do European facial. So I came to the nice salon. It was advertising that and that. It was very expensive actually. So it's okay. I decided I go. I have to go. I have to maybe learn something. So I went to that salon, and I saw the products we used in my salon. So teeth, French product. And I said to the girl, "Oh, I know that product." And and I'm from America, and she looked at me and she said, oh, I have to tell you, I don't know how to work. I don't know how to do good facial swear.
So that she was just there, but she didn't know how to do her job?
Yeah, she found out Soviet, I'm a esthetician, and she said, I don't know how to do a job. I said, whatever you do, do it. I don't know, just do it. No, she did actually a good job, but she was scared because I told her I was from America, and I'm a esthetician. She said, it's such a nice girl, it was a sweet girl. But she said, oh, I don't know how to work. And she said, all this Russian good esthetician, they left country and now it's hard to find somebody who can teach to do good massage, European massage. So it have to cost a lot of money to do it. So I end up, I was teaching her how to do massage. It was so funny. So all the rest of the fashion, I was teaching her how to do massage. Funny.
Okay. So we should actually close this out. It's getting kind of late and...
Yeah, we have to work tomorrow. Time.
But thank you guys so much for listening. This is awesome. Thank you for your feedback.
If you guys have questions, please.
Well, we'll take one question. I mean, maybe tomorrow, if I can get my act together, we can have someone Skype in and ask a question. Because I've been having trouble with this technical setup.
Okay, Lady Ocast
is not my friend. But we'll take one last question from the Twitterati over here. Let's see. Who wants to ask us a question that will take us out? Anyone? Anyone? No, apparently not. With that, should we play them a song, Mom?
Yeah, you can play them a song.
Yeah,
we can play a Russian song.
A Russian song. Thank you, Jimmy. I appreciate that. Jim Groom says this is fascinating.
Yeah, okay. Loves it.
This is fascinating. This is great. And you know, the other thing I have to say is that I'm actually not recording this. Timmy Boy is recording this for me because I you know, again, I'm having technical difficulties here. But I'm very, very happy that I'm recording this because how many people listening? There are. Let's see. Right now, there are 11 people listening, which is a lot for DS106 Radio. But they're the right 11 people. That's the thing. Is that the right 11 people?
Okay, thank you very much for listening.
One last question. And then we will sign out. This probably is going to open up all kinds of different things. But what do you think, just in a word, what do you think your lives would have been like if you had stayed in the Soviet Union? Michael Smith, who's a professor at York College at CUNY, wants to know, what do you think?
I don't know. I hard to say, honestly. But only thing I know, I wouldn't be so good like here, so. I don't know. Would be different, I guess.
Pop, what do you think?
I think we would survive, definitely.
Yeah.
But we probably will live in...
Gonna live in
society where people hate each other. And
do you think you would have left eventually? So like, let's say you didn't leave in 1979. Do you think you would have left after 1989?
No, 1979, I was 39 years old. Later on, probably would be very hard to leave. I still believe that I left too late. I should leave earlier than that. But there's a lot of circumstances. So you would probably be the director of an institute.
No. You wouldn't have.
I probably wouldn't have gotten humanities. I probably would have done something technical, right?
You never know. You maybe end up with...
Well, there's not a whole lot of humanities.
But, you know, sometimes I'm thinking about my life here, and I see... I came when I was 34 years old... And I think I did a lot. I learned language. I learned how to drive a car. I know mentality. My mentality changed. We did a lot. We did amazing job here in the United States. You know, some people, I speak English. You speak English. You have some PhD, doctor in linguistics. You know, we did a lot of things.
She's right. I'm retired. I retired from my engineering position, and you know, I was working for many, many years here as an engineer. I was educated. I was trained as an engineer. At the beginning, I was a machinist, which was very good part of my life.
Very
good step to the future.
But you know what?
Very grateful to this country.
But my favorite day, my very happiest day was when you came to from work and you said, you know what, I'm gonna be working as engineer. It was for me. It was just, I don't know, it was the happiest day.
Yeah, you started as a machinist and eventually you got to do what it is you were trained to do.
But
which
I
is
went
pretty,
to business school, I was working
awesome.
In a bank, and then I did manicuring, and then I went to esthetician school and I became the esthetician, and I love my job. Recently I had some problem with my hands, but I worked for 10 years in one company, and I love my ladies, I love my people. Honestly, we had a very happy life over here.
How many years have we been here?
In 30,
here? We've been, how long?
30, we came 79.
October.
32,
yeah?
In October.
32 years.
October 4th.
Which is Jonah's birthday.
And Jonah was born exactly, it was 25th.
Yeah, 25 years after, yeah.
After, exactly in a day, in a day we came to United States.
Yeah, that's right, October 4th. Well, you know, at some point, when we do this again, I'll talk about what it was like to start school.
A very here. Important date also. You was born on the 22nd of
June, which is what? Tell them what it is.
It was the World War II started.
30 years to the to the day.
But I was born on Pioneer Day. I remember it was Pioneer Day. Okay.
You know when my son, when Eli was born, my little one?
7th of November.
Which is what?
Which is the revolution.
All kinds of interesting, numerological,
craziness. Numerological
miracle. Okay, so folks, we're actually going to sign out, and thank you again for listening. And this was a blast, and just really really interesting for me to hear my parents talk. And I'm very grateful for the fact that we have a DS-106 radio where we could do this. And DS-106 radio is a way for us to get our stories out. And a way for us to preserve our stories for. You know, for my little ones.
I didn't finish that story about my brother.
You know, I'm going to run out of batteries on my computer, and then we're going to be in all kinds of trouble. So why don't we come back. We'll do this again for sure, and we'll tell more stories and all kinds of cool stuff. So we're gonna leave you with a song, and we're gonna play a song by Vladimir Vysotsky. What should we play? What song should we play? All right, this is the selection. Tovarish Uchonny, you know that one?
No, Tovarish Uchonny, it's not Vysotsky.
Yes, it is. Sure it is.
Tovarish Uchonny, Vysel Glubokoy Zadnitsy. Это Vysotsky, Шау.
Но может Vysotsky поет песню? Okay, тогда, okay, then in that case, I'm just switching to Russian. In that case, На нейтральной полосе цветы.
Okay,
so this is a song
tell him in English,
on the flowers on the neutral zone.
Neutral zone.
Right, so it's about soldiers from opposing sides. The border of Turkey or Pakistan, he's not sure, and they get together and they drink and there's some flowers
who's singing it?
Vladimir Vysotsky.
Who's Vladimir Vysotsky?
Oh, they actually have played Vysotsky for them
before. I tell the story about Vladimir Vysotsky.
Listen, the battery is going to blow out here.
We gotta
go, folks. Thank you so much. On the count of three, 1, 2, 3, radio DS-106 radio for life. Ready?
One, two, three.
DS-106
Radio for life.
Awesome. Oh, that's the wrong song.
На границе с Турцией или с Пакистаном полоса нейтральная, справа где кусты. Наши пограничники с нашим капитаном, а на левой стороне ихние посты, а на нейтральной полосе цветы необычайной красоты. Капитанова невеста жить решила вместе. Прикатила, говорит, милый то да сё. Надо ж хоть букет цветов подарить невесте. Что за свадьба без цветов, пьянка да и всё. А на нейтральной полосе цветы необычайной красоты. И к ихнему начальнику точно по повестке тоже баб прикатила, налетела блажь. И тоже милый говорит, только по-турецки. Будет свадьба, говорит, свадьба и шабаш. А на нейтральной полосе цветы необычайной красоты. Наши пограничники, храбрые ребята, трое вызвали сети, а с ними капитан. Разве ж знать они могли про то, что азиаты порешили в ту же ночь вдарить по цветам, ведь на нейтральной полосе цветы необычайной красоты. Капитан от запаха цветов, капитан мертвецкий, но ихний капитан тоже в доску пьян. И повалился он в цветы, охнув по-турецки, и по-русски крикнув «мать», рухнул капитан, а на нейтральной полосе цветы необычайной красоты. Спит капитан, и ему снится, что открыли границу, как ворота в Кремле. Ему и нафиг не нужна была чужая заграница. Он пройтиться хотел по ничейной земле. Почему же нельзя? Ведь земля-то ничья. Ведь она нейтральная, а на нейтральной полосе цветы необычайной красоты.
Say, for instance, I stand for